Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And welcome to the Bedpost Podcast. I, of course, am your host, Aaron Pym, and what I like to do here on the pod is bring fun and sexy guests into the studio to have in-depth conversations surrounding sex and sexuality. Today, I'm super excited to talk to this person. We connected on Twitter recently, and I mean, this is the first time I'm sitting down and having a conversation with them, so like, I'm going to be listening and learning along with all of you. So without further ado, please welcome to the mic, everybody, Executive Director of the Effing Foundation, Carlton. Hey, Carlton.
Hello, Lady Pym. It is wonderful to speak with you and connect with you today.
You too. I feel like we've got a lot to talk about, both Effing Foundation stuff and greater kink kind of stuff. I feel like we're going to fill this hour, no problem.
Yes.
I'm confident about it. Maybe we could start with you telling us what is the Effing Foundation? Tell us about it.
Okay, well, the Effing Foundation is a 501c nonprofit. And what we do, and here's our elevator pitch.
Yeah.
We work to reduce the stigma around sex and sexuality. And the way that we do that is by giving grants to sex-positive artists and educators. So what we do is we have a grant cycle, and we go over the applications, and ultimately we come out and we give $5,000 grants to individuals and groups who are creating sex-positive art and education. But what makes us a little unique is we tend to focus in marginalized communities and people that even in sex-positive communities are often marginalized. So we are pro-sex worker.
Yeah.
We give grants to individuals that are disabled. We give grants to individuals that are in people of color. Mm-hmm. We give grants to individuals that have a number of different disabilities, physical, emotional, mental disabilities. Mm-hmm. We throw kind of the net kind of wide and have as much diversity as possible. And we also prescribe to an idea of own voices. So we try to facilitate people that are in specific demographics telling their own narratives, creating their own educational content, and creating their own art. So if Effing funds a project, and it is a project about sex work,
Yeah. We
want to fund projects about sex work that are created by sex workers.
So important.
If you read a book 5 years ago about sex work and you've never touched it and you've never done anything in sex work, we're not going to give you a grant. So it's very important that people that have a specific identity are able to tell their own narratives, to tell their own stories, to validate their own experiences by creating content and being supported in that, and also to speak to the communities that are relevant and important to them.
You're speaking my love language right now, because I'm sure, you know, some of our listenership is aware that, like, most of the media that does get created about sex work is not by sex workers. They usually don't even hire like a consultant. You know what I mean? It's like non-sex workers basically contributing to the public consciousness about what sex work is, like people who don't know sex workers. All they see is what's in media, and it's created by non-sex workers, so it's misrepresenting all of us. So just so important. I feel like if people are going to, you know, people, non-sex workers, are going to get a good idea of like our jobs and what we do and who we are, it's going to be through media created by us. So fucking standing applause for you. I fucking love that.
Well, that's just being that. And this is a part of what effing tries to do, is to really like a normalize those conversations,
yeah,
and to really hold space for individuals to be able to speak about themselves and to speak about the different nuances. So like, even like you mentioned and spoke about, like sex workers creating content that's relevant and important, that's for sex workers or by sex workers, that is educational or artistic in nature. Yeah. You even break down the nuance that a trans sex worker of color is going to have a very different experience than a white sex worker of color.
1,000%.
So, you know, it's important that that individual be able to tell their narrative and their story. And the way that we support that is by having the grant application process open and demystifying it, not having it be as difficult as grant applications can be. Mm-hmm. We are open to giving grants to sex positive content, and just really like holding that space and allowing people to, you know, educate and create art.
Yeah. I love this connection between like sex positivity, sex work, and art. I feel like a lot of us are creatives. A lot of sex workers are creatives, are artists. So I love that you're like bringing kind of these two communities together, because they most definitely do overlap. What was the idea behind doing that? Like, who thought to first do that? Let's, you know, create a foundation that will fund sex worker art, essentially.
Well, it's not only sex work art, not only things that are produced by sex worker, mm-hmm. sex workers, but the entire spectrum of people that produce different things in the sex positive community. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, and as you well know, a lot of times a lot of those different communities overlap.
Yeah.
And but the ultimate idea came from our founder, Dr. Kit Stubbs, and they were really the individual that kind of said, there's a place for this. This is something that needs to be done, and this is something that we need to get the support of, you know, get support behind, and we need to actually do so. Kit was the individual that founded the Effing Foundation, did all of the initial work, and led the Effing Foundation for years, got the board of directors together, mm-hmm. About 5 years ago, got the advisory council together. And I was actually the first advisory council member. Wow. And in our first, our inaugural grant cycle was in 2017. And we had a grant cycle in 2017, 2018, 2019. We took a pause last year, naturally, because everything went south because of COVID, and we are in the midst of our grant application cycle currently. Awesome. which will go through until roughly about March of next year, and then we will announce a group of 22 grant recipients for who will receive $5,000 grants to support their work.
Amazing. I mean, you're truly doing the Lord's work. Because like adults need sex education. This is such a drastically underfunded field, being in sex work, being in sex positive careers and whatnot. It's something that really isn't taken care of like it mm-hmm. should be, because it's so fucking important. Mm-hmm. So I fucking another standing O from me on a standing O.
Well, just to clarify, I I'm truly doing the Lord's work when I host a back to school party. I haven't done one in a while, but when I host a back to school party and I require school uniforms, that's truly when I'm doing the Lord's work. But
I gotta find my kilt from my high school days. Get that kilt out. May not fit anymore. Most definitely won't fit anymore, actually. So maybe never mind.
Did you have black and white shoes?
Oh, I would have loved to. I had what did I wear? I think I tried to wear cute shoes for a while, and then I was like, fuck this, and just I tried to make an aesthetic choice, I swear. And then I was like, oh, no, wait, this is not conducive to anything. But okay, tell me, though, how you got chosen for this job, because you have like an extensive resume, I feel like, an extensive kink resume. Tell me a bit
Okay.
about your personal connection with kink and how you're in the community.
Okay, well, actually, I met Kit at Woodhull one year when
Oh,
my
nice.
partner and I were doing a presentation at Woodhull in 2017, and the presentation was super geeky. It was about the post-truth era. And it was about the concept of the post-truth era and how the idea of us being in a post-truth era had an effect on sex-positive lives and sex-positive communities and the information that we received. And this was very much in the wake of the year when you had things like alternative facts and counter-knowledge and basically people like thinking that it was okay to publicly basically gaslight people and say things that weren't true and carry on as though they were true. And so our presentation was about basically like being in this post-truth era, how is that affecting our lives as sex positive people? And one of the individuals that was in attendance for that presentation was Dr. Kit Stubbs, our founder. And they approached me and was like, hey, would you like to be on our advisory council? And we had a conversation, and I thought, hey, this is cool. This is something that I'd like to check out and do. And it just kind of like built from there. And we kind of went from point A to point B and progressed. And where I went from being on the advisory council for a couple of years to being on the board of directors to being the board of director president to, and I did that for about the last couple of years, and then transitioning into the executive director, executive director position. And so Kit and I basically switched where they went from being the executive director to the board president, and I went from being the board president to being the executive director.
Old switcheroo. But were you teaching a lot in the community at that point?
Yes, I was. I was teaching, I taught a lot, so, my partner and I, we traveled the Mid-Atlantic region, and we traveled and taught at national events several times. And I'm a rope guy, so I was known for teaching rope quite a bit and teaching like other BDSM kink skills and stuff, and then teaching some edge play skills. And so plus I was blogging as well, so I was heavily immersed in the kink community. And the thing about that was I learned about like all of the cool kink stuff and was teaching about all the cool kink stuff, but then I also had an interest and also sometimes spoke about some of the broader issues. So things like social justice, things like consent culture in a very genuine way, or things like how do we have really how do we create safer spaces or more accepting spaces, and also thinking about things like anti-racism in spaces. Why is it that like certain demographics or certain people come to kink spaces or sex positive spaces and they don't come back because they don't feel comfortable or they don't feel safe or they don't feel like they're being respected? And so those were issues that were kind of in my head, and it was like, So at the same time that I was on the advisory council, I was also still continuing to teach and do different things in the kink community. And then it just kind of like all kind of like combined and worked together and stuff and kind of led me to where I am now.
Important stuff. Like, all of it's important, even the lighthearted stuff of like, ooh, let's do some, let's do a fun rope workshop, or like, let's do an intro to BDSM. Like, it's all very important stuff, educational stuff, because as like to do harm reduction on all this stuff is like the wisest thing you can do about like the way you can approach your practice, right? So I'd love to talk about making safe spaces. Myself, as an events producer, I'm always looking to create safer spaces and to acquire more education surrounding that. So, and I know a lot of people, maybe that are listeners, are getting back into the like in-person, physical brick and mortar scene. We're all going to events again. Some of us are producing events. Maybe can we talk about this for a little bit? What can we do?
First off, like when I think about that, one thing that I used to teach about, and I used to teach to people that were new to kink, is I would call it the Christmas morning concept. So it's kind of like when you're a little kid and you start about September and you start like, getting super excited about Christmas and looking at like, I'm an old dude, so I remember like the Sears catalog when you
Oh,
like.
yeah.
Like mark off what toys you wanted,
Oh,
and it's like
yes.
you just had that build up until December, and you literally were jumping down the stairs on Christmas morning to see what was there. And for a lot of people, I think when you get into the kink community, you have that Christmas morning feeling where it's like, wow, I can do all of these things and I can experience all of these things, and it's just so overwhelming and so exciting that people just tend to go out and reach and get everything. And I think all of us kind of have that feeling to a degree right now because it's been so long since things were quote unquote normal, where you could go out and fully enjoy parties or fully enjoy events, or you couldn't fully just like embrace community or just like really connect with people and do things. So I think what we almost need is a reset, and I think we need to kind of like let people know that it's okay to go slow. And that's always a cliche in kink where people say go slow, go slow, go slow. But I think it's really important to say, it's okay to admit that none of us have done this for a while. I've only done a couple of suspensions this year. And that's not characteristic of years where I've done dozens or 100 suspensions. So there's a learning curve for me. There's a learning curve for everybody. And there's not only a learning curve for your physical skills, because all of this is skill based. Whether you're topping or bottoming, it is essentially skill based. And those skills can deteriorate over time, those skills can change over time. But also, we need to hold space for the fact that people may feel differently about things. And you may reevaluate your priorities, or you may evaluate how you play with people, or the things that you need, or the things that you will tolerate. And I think we need to hold space for all of that too. And those are some of the things and some of the ideas that will inform us as we kind of go ahead and we open up spaces and we allow people to kind of like reemerge. Then along with just the practical things of being an event producer, which is much more stressful than people will ever realize,
This is true.
and keeping people safe, and things like COVID are just an extra element onto that overall idea of safety.
I really like that you're talking about this, this idea of like, let's take a moment to reset, because I've definitely done that for myself as well. I'm like, since we've had this break from like in-person parties and events and whatnot, it's like, okay, this is like my chance to, rather than just like go, like I used to, this is my chance to be like, okay, but do I actually like the way, I do things at parties, or the types of parties I go to, or the people that I choose to play with, or the kinks that I choose to engage in. Am I just doing it Can I take this moment to be like, okay, let's really break down and like take a look at all of the elements of this and the stuff that I'm really enthusiastic about doing and the stuff that, you know, I really don't love. Like, this is my chance to really, like, now that I'm not doing events, to really think about that and go forward more thoughtfully, in the way I practice kink, like in public spaces.
Absolutely, and I think people like to talk about risk profiles and kink,
Right.
but I think that people's risk profiles are very, very different now. And because like a lot of us have dealt with like things like illness, immortality, and thinking about like what's really meaningful, what's really important, and it's okay to decide, you know what, I don't want to go to an event and run through five scenes that aren't meaningful and aren't feeding my soul or aren't feeding my spirit. Or it's okay to go to a party and decide, you know what, I just want to dress and chill and not have sex or not play. It's okay to feel that way. It's okay to say, you know what, maybe I'm going to step back for a while and not go to anything. Or maybe it's okay for me to say, well, let me see how I can re-engage in the community in ways that are going to feel better or more meaningful for me. Or maybe like after a year, you're like, you know what? I'm not gonna mess with some people in the community.
There you go.
'Cause I just, you know, I don't want to deal with stress, or I don't want to deal with potential harm or potential drama. And part of me staying away from that is I just don't want to do it. I don't want to do it now.
Yeah, this is our moment, like, to reevaluate, like, our own self-care, like, surrounding the way we practice kink, and specifically with, like in public. Because I think we all learned, or maybe struggled with, or battled, or whatever, throughout the pandemic, this idea of how do we take care, how can we better take care of ourselves, right? So yeah, I think for me, like, even me reevaluating, like, I'm not okay with doing that anymore. Stuff like this, like you mentioned consent practices, which I know you're super knowledgeable about. And there are a lot of consent practices that happen like at parties that happen really commonly, especially like in pro circles and stuff like this. Stuff like, you know, like a lack of negotiation, stuff like not really taking the time to negotiate one-on-one. Maybe it's like one dom. This is something that's very common, I think, and I never really questioned it until quite recently, actually, where like one dom is kind of the head of a scene, like a group scene, say a multi-top scene, with one bottom, and they are the one person with access to the submissive or the bottom, and the rest of the doms kind of just get, you know, booked or like called in later after the fact, and they're just kind of filled in with some details from the dom, not from the sub, you know, and you just kind of show up to the scene and do the thing, right? You don't really get to talk to the sub one-on-one out of role in those scenarios. And I realized that was a big one for me where I was like, oh, wait, this is really not something I'm willing to do going forward anymore. And it's actually a really common practice.
I don't think that people understand a lot of time topping, how much of a skill it takes, and I don't think people understand how much of a responsibility it is. Because you are taking somebody's personal care into kind of you're responsible for somebody's personal care for that point in time or for that moment that you're working with them. And I don't think people really understand how much it really takes. And I don't think people sometimes understand that it's not always easy to give. And people look at dominance, and this was an issue for me when I first got into the scene, that sometimes I would ask a lot of questions, and I would ask a lot of questions of people that I wanted to play with, and I wanted to top. And sometimes I would get pushback because people would say, well, I don't think you really know what you're doing because you're asking so many questions that I don't think you're really dominant.
Oh, jeez.
And they would say things like, well, If you're a dominant, then you should just know.
Ugh. Yeah.
And so I'm, if you know two things about me, I can be really sarcastic and I'm a comic book fan. So I would tell people, I'm Batman, I'm not Jesus. I know a lot of things. I don't know everything.
And I don't know
And there's
you, like,
no,
yeah.
That's real talk. I don't know you. So it's like, if I come to you for a session, or if I come to you and we're engaging in negotiating personal play, if I come to you to bottom for you, there could be things that you could do to five other people that would be absolutely fine and great for those people, that if you were to do that to me, could be at worst either like really hokey and it wouldn't give me a good experience, or it could be a bad
Harm.
experience for me, or it at on the far end, it could be potentially triggering. Or it could be medically harmful to me. And if you don't ask, and if I don't give you information, how can you possibly know?
That's it. I mean, same thing with me doing pro sessions. Another thing that's super common, like just with 101 pro sessions, one-on-one pro sessions, is like they come in just being like, oh yeah, just do whatever. Like, do whatever you want to me. And I'm like, I get that that's the fantasy that you want in the scene, but like, to be able to facilitate that fantasy, I need to actually know what you're okay with and what you're not. Like, I need a bit of a background to your experience level so I know like where to even start with half this stuff. Like, it's this separating this fantasy from the reality. Like, I get that you want it to feel like I know everything and I'm in charge of everything and I can read your mind and predict every like next moment in the scene. But it's like, yeah, but there's a lot of background work to do so that I can do that fantasy for you. Because believe me, if you just say do whatever you want to do with me, 9 times out of 10, you're not going to walk away satisfied.
No, because that's not realistic. That's not realistic. And what that does is that kind of almost makes you like a deer in the headlights when you're topping in a scene. Because you're like, okay, I don't think start thinking of all of the things that I'm going to do. I start thinking of all of the things that I can't do or that I would be worried about doing. Because at that point, when somebody says, do anything to me that you absolutely want, what that does is you're like, okay, does this mean 101 stuff? Does this mean psychological stuff? Does this mean physical things? Does this mean that this person is asking for edge play? Does this mean this person is asking for me to kind of indulge my fantasies or my ideas, or they're expecting me to know and indulge their fantasies or their ideas?
It's so vague.
And there's so many different variables. And I think people, it's like you say, people have this fantasy that, well, if a dominant is in control, then they have all of this knowledge and they can just do these things. And it would almost be like if you send somebody, if you walk into a bakery with somebody and you, and like you're going to give this person whatever they want out of the bakery. And you say, what is it that you would like? And they say, get me anything that I, get me anything that you want out of the bakery. I don't know if you like cake. I don't know if you like pie. I don't know if you like.
Savory bun. I like lots of options.
I don't know if there's a medical reason that you can't. I don't know if you have a food allergy.
There you go.
I don't know if you're diabetic. I don't know. And the thing is that's fascinating about creating scenes is there can be something that may be potentially triggering or may resonate with a person in a way that you may not expect. So you could buy somebody a piece of the pie, and that piece of pie could be highly problematic to somebody because they say, I had a horrible experience with pie once. And that's the same thing with you topping a person. So if somebody says, do anything you want, and you just intuitively say, oh, okay, cool, I would give you a spanking. For some people, they'd be like, okay, that's a great warm-up. For other people, they would say, that was super, super 101, and that was super, super boring for me, and that was really unfulfilling. That was a wasted hour. Then for some people, if you went to spank them and you hit them once or twice, it's going to be super, super triggering to them. And if you don't know, how can you possibly do something if you don't know? And that kind of addresses like the other thing about as everybody is stepping back into spaces, we've all been out of spaces for a while. So all of our desires or a lot of things have changed for all of us. Plus, you have an influx of completely new people. And so you may have people that their frame of reference is going to be very different when it comes to kink, and they may not necessarily know what it is they want to do or what to ask for. And everybody's got to take the time to kind of like figure that out and learn that before we go and we plan and we actually do something.
Let's take a moment to talk about our lovely sponsors, shall we? First of all, Oasis Aqua Lounge is a water-themed sex club located right here in Toronto at 231 Mutual Street. Oasis is inclusive of all genders and orientations and is shame-free when it comes to pleasure and play. Check them out at their website, oasisaqualounge.com. ComeAsYouAre.com is a trans-owned, trans-operated sex shop that also happens to be feminist and anti-capitalist. They carry only the best sex toys and want to give you the best price possible. Next time, use the coupon code BEDPOST, that's BEDPOST, when checking out at comeasyouare.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
One thing that I talk about a lot on the podcast is bottoming skills and how do we acquire them, and how do we know what to do, you know, before we've done it, right? And I think that is a similar thing with what you're talking about like being on break from events. Well, some people just suddenly started to getting to kink at the beginning of the pandemic, and they've just explored it solo or on their computers or maybe virtually with other people and never actually been in like a physical kink space before. So it's kind of all these like kink newbies coming up, and it's like, how are they supposed to, maybe some, you can give a couple, you know, nuggets of advice surrounding like, what can we do to prepare ourselves to get into spaces, physical spaces again, maybe if we, or if we've never been in them in the first place?
I think education and knowledge is really, really important. And I don't think you can have enough education and you can have enough knowledge. And I think one thing that's good about knowledge is that you can gain knowledge from everywhere. So I wouldn't say that if you're getting into the scene, like you find one guru dominant that claims that they know everything. Because there's always one dominant that's like, I literally know everything about kink and you should listen to me and I can tell you everything. And
One true
don't listen to that
wayism.
person. Yeah, don't listen to that person. Go get a bunch of different knowledge from a lot of different people. And sometimes you will be, there are people that are willing, and meet people where they are, because sometimes people will be willing to share knowledge with you. Sometimes people will be willing to kind of like take you under their wing and give you educations about things. Then at other times, you will have to pay for things. You will have to pay to learn and to acquire skills. So anything, there's a combination of different ways you can learn, but read. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Look at things. You can get video. You can get video or virtual education. If you feel comfortable and feel safe with it, you can go to different events and you can learn. One thing about learning is it should be a low pressure environment. It shouldn't be that you are learning, but that learning is predicated with the idea that you have to play a full scene.
Yes.
Or you have to have a dynamic with somebody. Or you have to have sex with somebody. Or you don't owe anybody anything except that deference of respect to learn and absorb the knowledge that they're giving you and evaluating that. But you don't owe anybody your body because they are taking time to teach you something or to educate you on something. Gain as much knowledge and as much information as you can, and then after that, start to develop and decide what works for you. Mm-hmm. And think about the ways that is going, that you can learn in ways, and you can explore in ways that are going to feel good for you and are going to be safer for you.
I think this is all fantastic advice. I always say as well, if you want to learn a skill, don't take a bunch of classes from the same facilitator. You know, take a mm-hmm. bunch of all different classes from all different teachers. That's 1,000% true with kink. I know the way I'm a professional. I know the way I facilitate professional scenes is very different from other professionals. Even just stuff like protocol. I'm like, yeah, call me whatever. Like, I'm a low protocol dom. And some doms are very, very high protocol, and people fall everywhere in between. So it's like, don't ever just, limit yourself to the one resource, because there's so much out there. And then also how you're saying no pressure to, once you get in physical spaces, to like, you know, do it in any sort of a way that you think you need to. Like, you can go as an observer, you can, like, you know, baby steps, you know, dip your toe in wherever your comfortability is at.
And I think that there's two other points. So, like, when I teach rope, a lot of times, mm-hmm. one thing, and I would use a couple of different quotes from Bruce Lee, and I would paraphrase them. And one thing that Bruce Lee used to teach his martial arts students was, take what is useful and discard what isn't useful.
Yes, yes.
So if you go and you go to a class and you learn something, you can gain that knowledge, but some parts of it you will take with you, some parts of it you will discard. So if you go to a rope class and you learn about TKs, there are specific things about friction and tension and rope placement that you can absolutely learn, but then you have to also discard what isn't going to be useful. So if you know that you have severe rotator cuff injuries and you can't bottom for a TK, you can learn all about TKs, but guess what? That TK ain't going to work for you to bottom for. If it's not in your risk profile as a rope top to tie people and to put people in TKs, you can learn the nuances of TKs, but you can also learn chest harnesses that will work and may be a way to mitigate the risk that you don't want to take putting somebody in a standard TK. Or maybe you can learn a arms front harness. You can adapt and learn. That, number one. And number two, and I don't think this can be said enough, and I think this is important when we talk about, like, actually learning and getting into communities. Do not speak to people as though they are in roles unless you have permission to. You have permission to. And probably you will get a lot further being mannerable than you will by acting an ass when you step into a space and you're trying to learn something.
100%. This is like my biggest fucking piece of advice for, people who are, submissives or bottoms and looking to meet people, get into the kink scene, even how they engage with, like, professionals and whatnot, is do not approach and roll. don't approach and roll. You're a person talking to another person, so talk to them like that. I just think that is so valuable. It seems like such common sense, but honestly, it's not, because my inbox is flooded by people groveling. And I'm like, I didn't consent. I'm not your dom. You know, I don't know who you are. Like,
And not only that, if I send you a message, I don't even know what capacity I'm dealing with you in. Because if I don't know you personally and we're not friends, or we're not in a dynamic, or we're not connected, or we're not buddies or whatever, and I'm reaching out to you, ask you something, I need to think about how I'm asking you something or how I'm approaching you. And if I start my email and the first thing in my email is a list of 10 different things that I want done and how I want them done and what I want to experience and what I want to feel and what I want to do. And it's super explicit and it's super sexual and it's this and it's that.
And it's so long.
And I haven't even literally said hello to
like,
you.
Like, hi, I'm fine. How are you? Yeah.
Exactly. What I am telling you, first off, I'm not even having respect for you as a professional.
Yep.
I wouldn't call up a lawyer and call up a lawyer at his office or at their office and say, hey, I need to find out about a contract. Here's five things that I need to ask you about a contract. Can you email me and get back to me? I wouldn't do that to a doctor or a lawyer. I wouldn't call a plumber up and say, hey, I've got this issue in my house. Can you just come and look at it?
Yep.
So why do you approach a professional, Dom? Why do you approach a professional in the same disrespectful way?
Yep.
If we, 5 years from now, and we're buddies, do I have consent to approach you if I say, hey, I really would like to bottom for something? Is it okay if we have that conversation? Is it okay, and would that be a conversation you're willing and you're opening to have on a personal level?
That's the least we can do, I feel like. Like, when you think of how you interact with, like, your friends and your, you know, your kinky friends, play partners maybe, or, like, romantic partners, like, you know, I'm not even going to text, like, my closest, like, partners. I'm not going to just text them, you know, a long rambling thing about this scene that I want to do with them. I'm going to preface it with, like, hey, I've got, like, a scene, you know, hey, how are you? Like, good morning, whatever it is. Like, how was your sleep? Hope you slept well. You know, I've got this idea for a scene that I think, you know, we could do together. Let me know, you know, if you want to hear about it, or if you're interested in having this conversation with me. Like, that's what we do to our closest people. So why would we then not do that to a stranger? You think you would double down and do it even more to a stranger just to make sure that you're respected because you don't know each other. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing that with my, like, closest people, asking for consent before we, you know, before I start negotiating a scene, like, just a monologue negotiation of a scene with myself, essentially. Like, I don't know. Why do people do that? Where does that come from?
I think a lot of times people, and I've thought about this as a dominant, because I've thought about this a lot of times doing rope, things like rope and stuff.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people, And a friend actually said this to me one time, that a lot of people want the experience. Yes. They don't necessarily want the person.
Want the person, yes. It's activity first. It's not person first.
And that doesn't mean by any means that somebody has to have a dynamic or a relationship or anything with me to do a scene with me, but respect is due to everybody.
Sure.
Consideration is due to everybody. And If somebody blows your inbox up and they, you know, they ask you for five different things and they get mad if you don't respond to them within 15 minutes of that email, I guarantee you that if you could look at the send list on their email,
they probably
have sent that same email to 10 or 15 different people.
Yes.
Because all they're doing is they're basically saying my needs and what I want is more important than how I speak to you as another human being.
Yep. It's the only thing. It's the thing.
And what that does is, and this is why I say manners is a big thing. Mm-hmm. People often tell you who they are. So if I email you and I email you six times demanding that you respond to me,
Jesus Christ,
I'm telling you something about who I am in an email. Are you really going to feel super safe with me in an enclosed environment where it's just you and me one-on-one?
Hell no. Yeah.
And it goes both ways. If you speak to me and you talk to me about rope and I'm like, well, you know, let's talk, let's dialogue, let's see if we can put something together, and I feel good and I feel safe and I feel fun in the interactions that we're having, that's going to be a very different conversation. If you're super pushy and super, you know, you're super pushy and you push over my boundaries, yep, and you're trying to talk to me about rope in the middle of the workday, or you're not respecting that I don't maybe want to talk about it at night after I've had a long day and I've worked out. Yep. And if you keep pushing like that and I don't feel great in the interaction with an email or a text or just in talking with you, do you think I'm going to feel that my communication is going to be great with you when we're actually in a scene?
Exactly.
Or we're actually tying, or you know, I'm in a space where I've got to interact with you?
Yeah, it's all red flags, right? It's like, yeah, if this is how negotiation is going, like, I don't want to do the scene. Like, can you imagine what a shit show the scene will be? If this is literally the first impression that I'm getting of you, like, this is just emailing back and forth, and it is going so badly, then, you know, I'm dodging a bullet by not getting in a room with you, basically.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of, like, I've been in the food service industry basically my whole life, before I got into sex work exclusively. This reminds me of, like, customers expecting good service. They're a regular at an establishment and they're expecting the highest level of service. But every time they come in, they are treating the servers like complete trash. And it's like this disconnect between, like, what they're putting out there and what they're getting back. It's like, they're just going to offload everything and expect, like, good things coming back to them. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me how you can literally go into a situation and do that and then expect the person to bend over backwards, you know. And that's the cycle that I guess people like that get into, is that they're just like, harumph, nobody treats me well. And it's like, well, there's a reason.
Yeah,
the bottom denominator here, sir. Yeah.
Yeah, because what they're doing is they're signaling to you that what your experience is going to be with them.
Yes.
And a lot of times, and especially after you've started to do this for a while, it's kind of like what you were talking about, where it's like you start to evaluate, is this something that I want to do?
Yeah, even for money.
and I'm almost at the point now where it's like, if I were to think about doing a scene with somebody, it's like, is this going to benefit me in some way? Is this going to bring me some joy? It's not even about getting laid or having an orgasm or something like that. It's like, is this going to be an experience that's going to be a good experience? Is this an experience that I'm willing to get up off of the couch, take a shower, shave? And
especially, like, in, like, nowadays during COVID, like, it takes a lot for me to leave the house nowadays. You know what I mean? After this almost 2 years of lockdown, it better be really fucking enticing to get me out of this house.
Yeah. And it's like, if you feel like that after your interaction with somebody, that it's going to be highly upsetting, or that you're going to be near in tears, or that, you know, talking more seriously that it's not going to be safe and it's not going to be good. And I think over the last year that I've spent like the whole year trying, almost 2 years, trying to keep myself and my family and my friends and people really close to me safe.
Safe, yeah.
Do I want to put myself out there to something that's going to be potentially harmful?
Yeah.
And the answer largely now is no. I don't.
Again, with the thing of like reevaluating, right? After the pandemic, or like at this stage of the pandemic, it's reevaluating. It's like maybe before I would have, you know, but now, no, thank you. I'm not going to. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
And I mean, as a sex worker, that is, it is a privileged place to be able to refuse work. I will, I definitely will always say that. And to be able to pick and choose and to be able to demand certain screening procedures, for instance, and a certain rate, you know, that's all very privileged stuff. But, you know, where money is not concerned, I think that's a great thing to be kind of reevaluating at this time. Just your own safety, your own self-care.
I will say this. I am not a sex worker. I have never done sex work. By life experience, I've had the opportunity to have a lot of sex workers in my life. Mm-hmm. And what they have did is they've given me a gift of knowledge of sharing their lives and their experiences and the work that they do with me. Mm-hmm. If you've never done sex work and you've never had the privilege of having a sex worker explain to you exactly what it is you do or sex work is, keep your mouth shut because you have no idea what it is that work is.
Thank you.
You have no idea what sex work is. It's like I could talk to you about what I've done being a dominant or being a rope top and stuff. Mm-hmm. What your experience is as a professional dominant, I can't speak to that. I cannot speak to that because it is another level and it is another context. And once again, it's like about having respect for the work that people do. If you aren't an attorney, I can't imagine that you would go to somebody who's a Harvard-trained attorney or who's a really good trial lawyer, and you would say, you know what, let me tell you about what it is you do in your job.
Yeah, the mansplaining of it all.
But, you know, people will do that all the time, and it's like, I always want to be deferential and respectful to sex workers because I've had sex workers to share it with me just like a little, you know, just a little bit of what it is that you have to do. If no more than the marketing, no more than the tech work that you have to do, no more than setting things up, no more than knowing about finances and knowing how to do your taxes. So many things. If you don't know, then you don't know. And be respectful when you're speaking about something that you don't know.
Yes. Thank you for that. And I feel like having sex worker friends is, other than being an actual sex worker yourself, it's the best way to get a better idea of what sex work really does entail. is to, like, make sex worker friends. Sex worker friends are the best friends, as far as I'm concerned. So if anything's going to kind of broaden your mind as to the type of work that goes on in this industry, it's befriending sex workers. We're good people. Be our friends.
Absolutely.
Ugh, man. It's very interesting being a sex worker in a room full of people and having a non-sex worker trying to speak for you or on behalf of the community. Like, it's a very, very interesting experience. Not one that I would wish upon too many people, but it for sure happens surrounding sex work, as you mentioned, like, over most other types of work. I wonder why that is. I mean, in a broad sense, I know why. But I feel like, is it because people have sex in their regular lives, so they think they know what sex for money is like? Like, they do it. You know what I mean? Like, they do it. They think they have the skills, maybe, because they have sex. So they think they can speak on it?
Being a person that's on the outside looking in, and I would think that this spills over into some of the other sex-positive worlds or ways that people connect with people that are in sex-positive spaces. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when people say sex-positive, mm-hmm. people automatically think sex. And when people think sex, people automatically think of a specific thing. And when people think of a specific thing, a lot of times the manners go down, the perceptions go down, and people kind of forget where they are.
Like the over-focusing kind of.
It's like, so if I'm approaching you, I should approach you as another human being and approach you with respect. I shouldn't approach you as you're my fantasy, and so I can say whatever I want to you without consent first, because, quote unquote, well, you're doing this work, that must be what you want.
Yeah, like the fact that it's a paid service is, therefore we don't have to do consent, because that is consent, which is very, very problematic. But I agree that I think people do think that. They're like, you do this work, so therefore you are consenting for me to just like dump this fantasy onto you in your inbox, you know?
And I think that, and this is something that I hope that we're able to change or kind of normalize or get people to think differently when you think about sex positivity. Sex positivity is, quote unquote, more than just sex.
Yes.
And sex is great. Sex is really great. It's better than chocolate chip cookies. I'm a fan. But sex and sex positivity has a lot more to do with just, quote unquote, sex. It has to do with how we experience pleasure. It has to do with how we are trauma-informed in our interactions with other people. It has a component of social justice. It has a component of economic justice. It has a component of thinking about health and safety. It has a component of thinking about consent culture. It has a component of thinking about science. It has a component of how we interact with our spirituality. So when you say sex positivity, mm-hmm. it's a wide umbrella. It's a really wide world, and it encompasses a lot of different things. And we have to be sure that, we are talking about people that are demisexual.
Yep.
We are talking about people that are ace. And, you know, you may say, well, oh, if you're not having a lot of sex, then, well, that's not sex positivity. But it's, you know, it's how we interact with people. It's where our morals and our ethics are. It's where our standards are. It's a lot of different things. So that umbrella of sex positivity, if we could get people to think differently about it, then we can get people to think differently about a lot of things. And some of the bad manners, some of the bad actors, and some of the issues that we have, we would be able to kind of like maybe not eliminate them completely, but people would mitigate them because people would think about their behavior a lot more.
I agree. There are a lot of people that dive into sex and trying to procure sex workers and trying to date people that are not sex positive and just don't approach it in that way. So it's all mm-hmm. take, take, take.
Yeah.
Is there, we should be wrapping up in a moment. Mm-hmm. Is there any last note you'd like to end on? Anything we didn't get to that we wanted to spend a few minutes on? You tell me if there's something left that you'd like to say.
Just for everybody to kind of like take care, because like in the next year, and I'm not quite sure when this will air, but in the next year, we're kind of like reemerging and the world's going to be different and going to events and things are going to be different. If you are a person that is new, put your self-care first. put your self-care before your desire sometimes. Learn as much as you can and grow and hopefully experience things in a way that are going to feel good to you and safe to you. And truly try to understand what sex positivity means in a lot of different ways, not just what your perception is. And support sex workers.
That. I think that's a great note to end on. Fabulous advice there. Carlton, this has been such a pleasure. Can you please, please tell the listeners where they can find you, you Effing Foundation, all of the lovely things you want to share with our listeners.
Okay, so please follow us at effing.org. That is our website. And you can also follow us on Twitter at effingfound. And please look for us on Facebook at the Effing Foundation. Please follow us on our social media. I'm always reaching out on social media, telling people for ways that you can engage with us, that ways that you can talk with us. If you have the capacity to do so and you feel moved to, please donate to our cause, because it directly goes to support our mission and to support sex positive art and education. So please connect with us.
Love that. Folks, you know where to follow me by now, at the Lady Pym One on Twitter. I'm at the Lady Pym on Instagram, or I'm at the Bedpost Podcast. The podcast has a Patreon. It's the Bedpost Show. The podcast has a YouTube channel. It is the Bedpost Show. And I never like to go an episode without bringing up the lovely lady who does all the original music for my podcast. It is Stephanie Copeland, and you can find out more about her at stephcopelandmusic.ca. Carlton, one huge last thank you to you. You've been a fantastic guest for this app. And I hope everyone has enjoyed this one. We will see you next week with another lovely, fun, and sexy guest here on the Bedpost Podcast. Get fucked, everybody. Goodbye.